This is Isaac, and you are listening to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast. Today we're going to cover a few topics, one of which is this leaked CIA document about channeling aliens from Mars. Another one is the social media experimentation I've been going under lately, and I will briefly cover the film Split. I've also got a couple other little small topics that I'll cover. We'll go over those first. First, I want to give a very large shout out to Sarah and Grace, who left reviews on Amazon for my latest book, The Dark Path. Sarah says that she listens to the podcast, so hey. I also received a review from a person named M. Vlad, who was critical of the book, saying that it is not recommended for Christians. And the reason I want to talk about that is because that seems to be a big component to this. I find myself unable to serve two masters here because I've found that my audience seems to be roughly half Christian and the other half occultist. So I'm not really sure how I can cover the topics of occultism without appearing that I maybe am supporting it. Just to be clear, I do not support the practices of occultism. I don't necessarily condemn them either. I mean, everyone has their own sort of path to choose. No pun intended. So I think it's curious that someone left a review saying this is not recommended for Christians. The review, when you read it, it takes issue with the presentation of information as somehow sympathetic to the occult without a Christian defense. Now, I've talked about this many times in the past. I am merely trying to understand what is going on in our world. And after years of research, it appears that the Illuminati, should we call them that, practice a occult system, an occult doctrine that stems from different philosophic practices, Neoplatonism, and practices of like ritual magic with ideas from different prophets such as the New Age, Helena Blavatsky and such. So for me, I'm more trying to piece together the puzzle here. I'm trying to explain what is going on in our world from my research. And of course, this doesn't make everybody happy, such as this particular reviewer. But the reason I wanted to talk about this review is because the reviewer wrote something that I found interesting that I did want to share with everybody. And I will read directly from the review right now. Quote, Michael Hoffman explains this notion of revelation of the method as follows. Realizing that our activities will sooner or later come to light, we structure our activities so that as conspiracy researchers unravel them, they will release information in such a way that it mirrors our initiatory procedure. In this way, the more we are investigated, the more masses of people are psychologically processed by the people who seek to expose us. The meme that constitutes our structure is then successfully mimicked within the consciousness of those who investigate us. End quote. Now, what's ironic here, not to sound catty, but the reviewer never stated where Michael Hoffman wrote this or who that even is. Now, I say that's ironic because in the review they were critical because they said that my research was not adequately documented, which of course is not true. If you've got the paperback or the PDF version, you can see there's hundreds of actual links in the back to the occult doctrine from Crowley, Parsons, and so on. But to be fair, they did say that they listened to the audiobook, so they obviously did not get the print copy, and I did not narrate the hundreds of references in the back of the book, because that's what people typically don't do when they do the audiobooks. But anyways, like I've said before, I'm definitely open to hearing criticism like this, so I appreciate even this shabby 2-star review. Because I think it is important that we all chime in on the conversation of what's happening, because that's the bigger picture here. It's not so much that I get great reviews on Amazon, which I love and I appreciate, but it's more important to me that we all chime in on this conversation and consider it. Because if you watch entertainment, if you watch the mainstream media, if you were from another planet, let's say, and you came here and watched what our focus was, focused on, you'd be hard pressed to think that we were an intelligent species. I mean, we are obsessed with reality television stuff, talking about the president and which porn star he's been banging. It's kind of crazy. We've got these amazing technological advances, things that are happening all around us. We're all connected in this world, but you go on Twitter and you see the sadness that lies within, and it's just people complaining. We're definitely not doing what we're supposed to be doing with technology. I mean, what is that? I don't know. I just know that we're not sort of evolving into something better at this point. But anyways, I lost my track of thought here. This Michael Hoffman character, that's the quote where it came from. I looked him up, and I believe he is an author, because you can look him up on Amazon, and based on the logic of the quote, I firmly believe it's this one person, because he's got several books on related topics. He doesn't necessarily strike me as wrong with what he said here. He says that, essentially, is saying that my book is a revelation of the method, and I am initiating everybody else to the occult processes, and more or less implanting these ideas into the subconscious. Now, of course, that doesn't make me super happy. It wasn't my intent. But it is a point I've considered in the past. When talking about symbolism and focusing energy, whether it be positive or negative. And, some of the people I've been on shows and interviews where they've asked me about this, they said, well, if you're, because my claim is that symbolism and, these symbols like the triangle of manifestation that you see Jay-Z and Beyonce doing, these symbols sort of trace and tie into a subconscious realm of archetypal knowledge or energy, and they do this so that others repeat it, and it sort of gives power to the sigil. So to talk about it doesn't necessarily help our cause, but I also don't think that not talking about it helps either. I think if people are unaware of what's going on, they can no longer stop it. Now, I'm not saying that just because someone does the Jay-Z diamond that makes them an occultist of the 33rd degree of Freemasonry or something. But I do think that if we don't keep the big picture in mind of intention and what we personally would like our lives to look like and go towards, that we can be easily influenced and swayed to go down this sort of path of occultism. Now, if someone chooses to do that, that's fine. That's their own free will to do so. I certainly don't care. But I think people are pretty ignorant to this stuff. I don't think they understand what's going on, and they're just being held, sort of going with the wind on this one. I think they aren't able to see what's happening right in front of their eyes. But, like they say, hidden in plain sight. So anyways, that was the point of that. I think the reviews are great. I appreciate them, even the critical ones like that. So keep them coming. That being said, I also have all my books on Audible, just like that person said. They said that that's where they caught the book, and you can catch it as well. You can catch any of them, all of them that are written. If you go to audible.com, type in Isaac Weishaupt, you'll find them all. I narrated all but one of them. I get a lot of flack for the way I pronounce Crowley as well. A lot of people say, oh, it's pronounced Crowley. And I've heard it both ways. And I used to call it Crowley, but long story short, a more appropriate pronunciation I've heard is Crowley, rhyming with holy or the unholy. because I don't think he was a holy man at all. But, you know, I talked about that last time with guest William Ramsey. So check that episode out for more on Crowley. But anyways, yeah, you can get them all on audible.com. You can even get them for free if you've never signed up for Audible. You just go to Audible, set up your account or whatever, and grab the book, and it'll give it to you for free if it's your first time using Audible. And that'll actually work out great, because what a lot of people don't tell you, you hear a lot of people talking about trying to go to Audible and getting the free book. If you stay on board with Audible for 3 months or more, then they give me a bounty on that, which helps support all of this that you're listening to right now. So it's a great way of helping you and I. And I actually use Audible all the time. This isn't a paid advertisement, but it's actually a great service for audiobooks, because you can pick up your progress on different devices and such. Anyways, sorry, I hate to punish you with the advertising, but if you hear my voice, you can hear I'm sick again. If you're keeping track, that is the second time this year so far. I don't typically get sick more than once a year, so I feel like I want to blame somebody, you know? You know how it feels, just, it feels right to find patient zero and then blame them. It's what I want, but I don't know who got me sick. I think what happened was I went to a party and stayed up pretty late. Not that I do that often. I mean, come on. But I didn't get any sleep that night. And I think what happens is if you don't get enough sleep, your immune system takes a dip, and then boom, I confronted one of the many viruses going around right now. So, which leads me to another quick point. I watched a video about a guy who had a great point. He said, long story short, if you've got a job that provides sick leave, quit coming into work sick. No one is impressed, because I feel like that might be where I got my sickness too. Because for some reason, people feel like they have to, cowboy up, if you will, and come into work sick to prove how tough they are. But there's nothing that pisses me off worse than that. So if you have a job where you get the sick leave, please, please stay home. No one's impressed. I want to quickly talk about Katy Perry. I know you're interested in this topic, because who isn't interested in Katy Perry? We're going to talk about this nun and this house that she is trying to buy. Now, if you are unfamiliar with what I'm talking about, back in about a year ago, March 2017, Katy Perry was trying to purchase some property in Los Angeles that was formerly a convent for Catholic nuns. Now, these nuns refused to sell her the property because they believe that Katy Perry is into witchcraft, which I partially feel responsible for, because I've talked about it so many times in the past. But hey, you know, she's the one that dressed up like a witch for the, I don't know which award show it was. She did a rendition of Dark Horse, and she was dressed like a witch, you know, burning at the stake and whatnot. So, this nun actually was saying that Katy Perry sold her soul to the devil, which she also admitted on a YouTube video. Katy Perry, she originally wanted to be a gospel singer like Amy Grant, and then she said she sold her soul to the devil and became a pop star. Now, the nuns were correct in a sense, because Katy Perry's own father, who's a pastor, reiterated the same claim when he called her a devil's child, which would not really make sense, right? Because that would make him Satan. But whatever. Anyways, he reiterated the idea that she's fallen to the dark side. So Katy Perry, they were asked, she asked them, or the nuns asked Katy Perry why she wanted to get the property. She said she wanted to go down and sit and drink green tea, just go to the meditation garden and just meditate. And the nun, Sister Callahan, said, I just thought, oh brother, which is funny, because these Hollywood liberal elitists, they certainly think they're on another plane of consciousness. But anyway, she revealed that the nun also talked to Perry about her her visit to Salem, Massachusetts, which obviously has its roots in witchcraft. And the nun accused her, said, "You're into witchcraft. You went to Salem," which obviously doesn't make you into witchcraft. I mean, I'm interested in going to Salem, and I'm not a witch. But anyways, the reason this hit my radar, and I'm gonna come back around to the news of why we're even talking about this here. But the reason why this house was on my radar was due to the history of it. A man named Daniel Donahue bought it in 1961, and his son committed suicide on the property. And it says he was also nearly murdered in 1969 by Charles Manson when the killer broke into his bedroom. This was when the Manson followers went to the Lino Rosemary LaBianca house and killed them. If you recall, that's the carved the word war into Lino's stomach, I believe. Anyways, that was right next door. So the convent is located at 3431 Waverly Drive, which is right next to 3301 Waverly Drive, which is where this infamous LaBianca residence now stands. It's actually been changed to 3311. Anyways, what's even more strange here, if you read Adam Gorightly's book, he was also a guest I had a few months ago. I got the privilege of getting his last Charles Manson interview. Anyways, there's a weird connection here because the LaBiancas were living in a home once owned by Walt Disney just prior to moving to 3301 Waverly. Now, I know this isn't some kind of smoking bullet, but the occult magic connections here could be considered if you think about the Wizards of Waverly and the idea that these murders penetrate the subconscious of the masses. And the weird fact that Manson actually first visited this house on the other side of the LaBianca residence, you'll find that there are some strange energies combining at this location. So, the real question is, why would Katy Perry want this location and the dark energy found nearby? She wouldn't be the first celebrity or entertainer to be interested in this topic. Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails infamously purchased the Tate Polansky residence at 1050 Cielo Drive, which he, you know, this is when he recorded the Downward Spiral album. And then there's different rumors as to what happened. Supposedly he either talked to or was influenced by Sharon Tate's sister and decided that this was a bit too dark and too much, and he moved out of the residence but took the front door with him down to New Orleans and then had the house destroyed. So, and they did rebuild a property on there, but it's now 1066 Cielo Drive, 66 being the number of fallen angels in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, Klepoth. Anyways, so, you know, Katy Perry, I had her connected into this whole Manson Helter Skelter idea with the rise symbolism that she's had also. It's also curious that she had an album out around this time that she purchased this property where she was doing the 666 hands right on her eye, and then obviously all the eyeball symbolism behind her album Witness and so on. So that's the gist of it. Basically, Katy Perry wanted to buy this house. It's got some dark energy attached to it, this property. The nuns didn't want to sell it to her. Katy Perry sued the nuns. And now fast forward to last week. And the nun, Sister Catherine Holzman, she was in court for a post-judgment hearing related to this case when she collapsed and died. Now, I don't want to add fuel to the fire of witchcraft, but could it be that there is some form of witchcraft happening here? I mean, for her to die in such a public manner, for such a very specific, related case, it does make us wonder. Now, I'm not saying Katy Perry killed her. I'm not saying Katy Perry is a witch. I am saying maybe. Another quick topic, Iggy Azalea, she is back, and she has a video called Savior with Quavo from Migos, and it's very curious because it appears that she is claiming to have turned from the Faustian bargain of entertainment, and the symbolism that we see here is that she is sort of focused more on a Christian sort of belief system. I don't know if that's true, but that's what the video suggests. And Iggy Azalea, she did disappear for a long time. She kind of came out and was very popular. I was very critical of her because I think she's a phony, like most entertainers. Because, you know, you can see videos of her prior to being a rapper where she was a pop artist. And so now she's back and she's got some, prepared to be some plastic surgery, which is crazy because she's so young. But anyways, the idea here is that she is putting out the image that she has turned from entertainment and the Faustian bargain. And you'll see a multitude of symbols. I'll try to pull those out for you and put them on the IlluminatiWatcher.com on the post for this show. But then we see the infamous bathtub sequence, which is the cleansing ritual of witchcraft before one goes into a certain state. Now, you recall Whitney Houston and Bobby Christina both passed away in the bathtub very mysteriously. And here we have another strange piece of symbolism showing us. So keep Iggy Azalea on the radar because I find that to be a very curious video. We also saw Fergie recently had a video that was showing us similar ideas. So either they are showing us and demonstrating sort of duality principles of, you know, vacillating between the light and dark, or these are legitimate attempts by these artists to break free from the spell of entertainment and the Illuminati. Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone, he was recently on Jimmy Fallon, and I found it curious because the headline grabbed my interest because it says, Macaulay Culkin responds to Home Alone conspiracy theories. But if you watch the video, there's no talk of conspiracy theories besides they're trying to say, I guess there's some room every now and then he says people claim that he's dead, you know. I mean, it was such a light fluff piece, but it was curious because right in the description, I don't think YouTube even realizes this, but the headline says Macaulay Culkin responds to Home Alone conspiracy theories. And in the description below, it says, Macaulay Culkin talks about his Pizza Underground days, walks Jimmy through bizarre rumors he's heard about himself, and ... So I thought, before I clicked it, I thought, holy crap, is Jimmy Fallon going to talk to Culkin about this Pizzagate stuff? And, you know, absolutely not. They didn't even come close to it. But if you'd watch the video, you do hear him talk about this Pizza Underground band. And he claims that all they do is they take lyrics and change them to pizza-related topics. But, you know, Macaulay Culkin's obviously been through something. I mean, the dude is strange now. I think being a young child actor in Hollywood takes its toll on everybody who goes through it. So I'm not sure why. Hopefully it wasn't the abuse kind, but probably. And then at the end of the video, you see Fallon and Macaulay Culkin pull out bunny ears and put them on their head. You know, the bunny ears is symbolism of the sex slave of the sex bunny, you know, as we see from Playboy and such. Supposedly that's tied to mind control ideas, which we might go into next week with my guest that will be talking to us about MKUltra. Now, let's get into this CIA document about Mars. Big ups to my homie Hot Rod. He found this one, sent it to me. And what it is, it's a PDF. It's a document scanned into a computer dated May 22nd, 1984. And you can see that the document itself was released in the year 2000. You can retrieve it on CIA.gov, under the title of Mars Exploration. And I'll post a link in the show notes as well. Now, the document doesn't give us a lot. It doesn't give us a big background on it or why they're doing it. But it does, obviously, when you read it, read like it's a remote viewing experiment to make contact with alien civilizations on Mars. Now, this isn't so absurd when the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats was about this topic of remote viewing in the military and all that. So this is definitely something that's happened. It's very plausible. Obviously, the document is there. Some will claim that this is not a false flag, but sort of disinformation to make us believe in something that's not real. But anyways, reading the document, you can see that they hand a sealed envelope with a 3x5 index card on it to a remote viewer, and all it says on it is the planet Mars, time of interest approximately 1 million years BC. Which, as we go through this, you'll find that to be very curious because they approximate the date, and they say approximately 1 million years BC, yet they'll give the subject specific geographic coordinates for them to go to. So interesting that they're very specific about the location, but not the date. So the subject starts out by visiting a yellowish pyramid. Now mind you, he's remote viewing to Mars 1 million years ago. And the first coordinates they give him, he shows up at a giant yellowish pyramid, which obviously is sort of like the pyramids of Giza, which there's much speculation and argument about what they mean. Truly occult principles here, hidden in plain sight. And then obviously you've got all the symbols behind the pyramid, the triangle of manifestation, and so on. But the viewer says that there's a problem because there's like storms, and he says that there's geologic problems, and so he's implying that the atmosphere is changing and there's storms and such. So the instructor tells him to go further back in time before this climate change incident. Now the subject goes back in time further and talks about all these megalithic monuments that he sees, which is very curious because that's the exact argument that Zechariah Sitchin and other ancient alien theorists have been making claims about with the large megalithic structures on Earth. They are there for no apparent reason. A lot of them, they can't really understand how they built them. Some they can. If you research, I forget the names of these things. Yeah, good story, right? I don't know. They're one of the places in South America, they have these very fine right angles built in. Ollanta Tambo, I think it's called. Anyways, they have all these like very intricate designs, and the Ancient Aliens show portrays it as, you know, hard stone, and how would they possibly have done this without power instruments back in the day? But from what I've read online on some of the more mainstream sites, they claim that these stones were actually very soft. So I don't know. I've never been there. But point is, there are some that are very strange. No one knows how they moved these giant heavy rocks without the technology that we have. Even some of the stuff they say to this day, they can't move. So I think it's very curious that they found similar structures out on Mars, which actually supports this ancient alien theory. Next, the remote viewer subject sees very tall and thin shadow people. I find this very curious wording as well, because on the show Dead Files, her name is Amy. She goes to one location where she sees these giant alien people, and she describes them exactly the same. Very tall, very thin shadow people roaming about. And what's also interesting is that I watched a David Wilcox lecture, and for the life of me, I couldn't find it. I tried to find it to prep for this show, I have no idea which one it was. I watched a bunch, and I would know it if I seen it, but anyways. He was talking about how, and I don't recall how he knew the information, but there he was saying that the aliens were these very tall, thin beings, and that the, I think it was the planets, were somehow spaceships that they would hollow out and they would be inside of, because these aliens were so large. Now, you know, make of that what you will. The remote viewer proceeds. He sees a giant obelisk like the Washington Monument. Again, this is symbolism that goes back to the ancient Egyptians did this stuff, and the Mesopotamians and so on. All these ancient cultures that had occult knowledge that they shared amongst themselves in secret societies, all this symbolism maybe has ties to outer space, which would support the ancient alien idea that aliens came to Earth to communicate with us, and that is the proof that they were here. Or maybe this is all just disinformation. Next, the reviewer sees these giant storm shelters, again pointing to the idea of climate change, and the instructor tells him to move towards and communicate with these Martians. He doesn't call them Martians in the document, though. Just referring to the tall, thin people. Anyways, he finds out that these Martians, they're ancient people that are dying and are past their time or age because the environment was corrupted. Which sounds very familiar. I know, excuse me. I know a lot of people aren't on board with the climate change thing. That's where I do draw the line on my conspiracy fandom. I believe in climate change. I don't believe in flat Earth. I think there's enough scientific evidence that I'm going to go ahead and commit to those two things. I know that's not a popular opinion, but I'm not big into throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Anyways, so the environment was corrupted. I'm sure there was a Martian Al Gore out there warning them about it. Which, by the way, I'm not saying Al Gore's a good guy, but like, I do think, you know, there's financial interest involved here in getting ahead of climate change and, you know, starting up businesses to help it. But like, that doesn't necessarily make it wrong. Just ask the people in Miami that are flooding out. Anyways, now, so the environment's corrupted. And he claims that some of these aliens left to go find alternate places to go. And they left inside of a rounded, shiny metal boat. Which sounds like a spaceship. Then the remote viewer follows them to where they went. And he says, quote, "It's a really crazy place with volcanoes and gas pockets and strange plants. A very volatile place. It's very much like going from the frying pan into the fire. The difference is there seems to be a lot of vegetation where the other place did not have it, and different kinds of storms." Now, this also draws me to the idea of L. Ron Hubbard's Scientology theory about, ancient peoples and their spirits being trapped in volcanoes and stuff. You know, I don't know if that's what that is, but they're all connected, perhaps. I don't know. Now, the document pretty much ends there. It says it takes about an hour for them to go through that process. I don't know why you wouldn't keep going. I mean, seems like if you're making contact with an alien species from a million years ago, you'd be okay putting a little overtime in, but whatever, that's where they end it, which raises a lot of concern about disinformation. But anyways, the questions I have is, are they still doing these sort of remote viewing contacts? Surely they perfected it. I mean, if they're really finding out this kind of information, I'm confident they're still doing it. Did they follow these Martians to wherever it is that they went? I mean, are there tons of alien groups that they've contacted? I mean, there's so many questions that arise from this. The idea that there's megalithic structures echoed on Earth supports this ancient astronaut theory, which I've dismissed many, many times. the obelisk is found on Mars. This is the symbol of the phallus or generative force in nature. So did these tall, thin shadow people have penises? Did they maybe give birth to the human race to have penises? Did they also have the climate change situation that we're facing also? Is that why we're being groomed to leave our planet by Elon Musk and so on? You know, they're talking about doing these trips to Mars, and there's all this predictive programming in Hollywood from films like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and so on. Are we being groomed to leave our planet? Is that why they're letting the climate change thing happen, maybe? I don't know. A million questions to be had from it. It was just a very curious document, so I think you should check it out as well, see what you think. I covered the basics of it, so there's not a ton more, but hey, you know, I miss things. Finally, I'd like to talk real briefly about social media. A few days ago, maybe about a week ago now, I started an experiment. I decided I was going to unplug from social media to see what happens. Because the reason why this came up is because I felt like I was a slave to checking it with every notification, you know, your smartphone's going off, distracting you from whatever it is you were doing. And not to say that they're not important things happening, but you are definitely a slave to it. Now, the idea of connecting and disconnecting so often is what I was interested in, because it seemed like we're constantly switching gears between, you know, the real world and the things we're doing there versus our smartphone and social media. And what was curious to me is because I've never been a big on multitasking. In the past, they claimed that, you know, that's how you get things done is with multitasking. But they found in the last couple of years that it truly isn't possible to multitask, because there is a switch time. When you're doing one task, you have to sort of like downshift, go into the next task, and then, you know, upshift into it. So there's a lot of transition time there that's being wasted. And I feel like that was what was happening with my personal life. I wouldn't choose to read a book in short periods of time. Meaning, like, I wouldn't carry a book with me and then between sentences I'm having with a coworker decide to read a quick, you know, quarter paragraph or something. Like, it's just an odd thing that's happening. I believe it's contributing to sort of like an ADD culture. Now, this, the reason for this is because it's sort of like a low commitment thing to have social media. It's also a superficial waste of time. You're having superficial connections and understanding with others. And what I mean by that is, for instance, when you see, when you're scrolling through your news feed and you see a headline, sometimes you read it and you kind of know what the story's about without actually reading it and clicking on it, and you share it. So why do we do that? Why do we do that? It's because we are, we're basically just on these social media platforms saying, this is me, and you know, you keep throwing your same ideas and attitudes out there. Like, maybe you've got a friend that's a vegan CrossFitter on Facebook, and surely you've already blocked them because you can't stand to read one more post about it. Either one of those things. No, but I don't mean to pick on those people, but, you know, you're sort of planting your flag and continuing to plant it, which is fine. Like, I don't have a problem with it. I just feel like sometimes when I get on my social media feeds, I already know what the people are going to say before they say it. Anyway, so I just found myself getting a real strong disdain for it. And of course, I'm not talking about any of the listeners here. None of you guys are doing this. It's all other people. No, but seriously, I think the tipping point was Twitter. Because every time I go on Twitter and I would go to, like, the search, moments or whatever it is, it's the latest news of what's trending on Twitter. it's always something real negative. It's always people complaining about something. You know, maybe a movie wasn't up to their expectations, so they're just trashing it. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's so hypercritical. I found it putting me in a bad mood. Besides that, you know, we've got this everybody building their own brand. You know, but who's this helping? I think it's only helping Mark Zuckerberg. It's not helping you with an actual relationship. Now, to back this up, there's a guy named Tristan Harris that I want you to look up, and he gave a TED Talk. Now, Tristan Harris was a Google ethicist hired to steer people's emotions and thoughts. If this sounds very familiar, it's because the Russians did it, allegedly, in the 2016 election. They bought a bunch of ads, maybe had a bunch of fake stories. And again, like I said, people saw the headline and just assumed it was truth and shared it. And before you know it, that picks up an energy. And now everyone thinks, you know, I don't know. I can't think of any of the headlines off the top of my head. Something about Hillary Clinton, I'm sure. And similar things happened with Pokemon. They claimed that the Russians influenced Black Lives Matter folks to travel to certain areas of sensitivities to racial tensions. So there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes is what I'm trying to get at here. And to passively look at social media is to be influenced by these things. Now, what is the hidden goal? Well, Tristan Harris, who again was a Google ethicist who got paid to do this sort of research, he said there is a race for our attention because there is a limited supply of your attention. And in order to do this, you have to know how people's minds work, referring to getting people's attention, which is interesting because that's what I talked about in my very first book, was I talked about how the Illuminati have this interest in understanding how our mind works. They spend a ton of money and research on it because they want to influence us. Now, the reason, you know, they talk about the supply of attention and there's all these social medias and websites are racing for our attention is because it is demonstrated through, like, YouTube. There's an autoplay. They found that keeps you watching and staying on YouTube if they keep autoplaying the videos. Same goes for Facebook. Same goes for Netflix. You know, this term binge watching, I'm confident, came from Netflix itself, perhaps, to popularize and make acceptable the idea of just sitting there watching, you know, a couple dozen episodes in a row, which I'm guilty of, by the way. Not saying I'm above it. So his argument, which I've casually observed, is that the internet is sucking us in. It's evolving to do this. And this evolution is not organic. And the technology is not neutral. There are forces at work here. An example that he gives that I found interesting is for Snapchat, something I don't use. It's, you know, because they grab profiles of your face and so on for God knows what. Anyways, they have a thing called Snapstreaks where it keeps track of the days that apparently you communicate with a friend on their device. It's like texting, I guess. And these kids are obsessed with keeping their Snapstreaks going so that they give their passwords to other kids if they're going to be, you know, out of cell phone service or whatever, to keep the Snapstreak going. And what's very odd here, Tristan says that things are different now because there are mad geniuses behind the scenes driving your behavior. And that's exactly what I postulate is going on in our world. There's mad geniuses driving our behavior, and if we don't wake up to it, we will become susceptible to their desires. They are true magicians in that sense of the word. Now, the Facebook news feeds and the Twitter feeds, they benefit from outrages. People want to share and put all their focus onto, you know, Facebook or whatever. They want to show you the outrage. And Facebook is good with that. They had, like we've talked about in the past, Facebook did that experiment of emotional contagion to see how people reacted to different stories on their newsfeed. And you know what they found? They found that if they could show you outrage, you would stay connected onto their device or their website. You would be essentially giving your attention to them, which, like Tristan says, that's the big battle going on behind the scenes, is people trying to fight for your attention. Now, so the outcome of this research is that they want you to be less calm, because what happens is you stay on the site, and then they cater to advertisers who also want to focus on the news feeds, and they want to have access to your mind and steer your behavior, which is the argument behind the Russia interference in the election. Now, the problem seems that they are changing the way we converse with one another. In the end, our entire life is spent, we need to understand where our attention is going and which time is best spent in our life. The technology talks to the lizard brain, and it actually connects us into our base frequencies, which isn't what we want to do, I don't think. I think we want to be a little more higher evolved than that. And what this Tristan Harris guy is saying is that there are boundaries, and there's technology addiction that steps into these sort of base frequencies. The Netflix CEO once said that their main competitors are YouTube, Facebook, and sleep. So do you think that these companies have your best interests in mind? They don't. And what's even more curious, and this is where I'll get a lot of people hooked onto this idea, is that Tristan said he studied at the Persuasive Technology Lab at Stanford. And of course, Stanford always comes up in these conspiracy theories when we talk about, like, you know, CFR, Trilateral Commission, all this stuff, MK Ultra, all these sort of things tie into sort of major universities, and Stanford's one of them. And Tristan Harris, based on his experience at this lab, says that there's a race to the bottom to get attention by going further down the brainstem to the lizard brain and connecting into outrage. So again, the idea is they just want your attention. They don't really care how to get it. They're going to feed into the most basic primal emotions, and they also do this through the cell phone, the smartphone. It's engineered as a slot machine. And Tristan Harris was on Real Time with Bill Maher talking about this. It's what they call a variable scheduled reward. Sorry, I had my tonsillectomy like 2 months ago. I still can't talk. Anyways, sometimes you pull this lever and you get a big reward, and sometimes it's just a text. But this buzzing and this dinging keeps us hooked into looking at the phone. Like the, big tobacco and big food, you can't simply enjoy a product part-time. They want all of your attention. They want everything. And Harris says that the information in the world is now abundant thanks to the internet, but attention is scarce. So we are now in the attention economy. That's why they keep the sound bites very short. They want to feed into people's confirmation bias. But the truth is that the world is much more complex than these simple dichotomies. And all these apps you put on your phone, they're meant to maximize attention, because all the competitors are fighting for more and more. So everyone's racing to the bottom for sensationalism. So anyways, my idea was I wanted to go 3 weeks without the social media. And I've been doing it for about a week. I've got a mix of feelings. At first, it was very liberating. At first, I was like, man, I got so much free time now. I didn't know what to do. So I downloaded like a game, Candy Crush. Maybe you've heard of it. And now I'm drawn into that. But like, I don't know. So like on one hand, I feel like, oh, this is nice. It gives me some free time. On the other hand, I do feel a little disconnected from people, because that's where everyone else is on social media. So I'm not sure where this will go. I am going to use social media to, let you all know when I write a new article or release a new podcast. Like, I'll do it for that, but I'm not gonna get on there and check my notifications just till the beginning of April. Like, I can already tell I'm gonna go back to it. I'm just gonna give it less power. So anyways, that is the show for today. Oh, real brief, next week we're gonna talk to an expert on MKUltra. I'm not gonna say his name in case for some reason we can't hook up. But you'll know who he is, which is interesting because I just recently watched M. Night Shyamalan's movie Split. And that was very interesting. It's about this guy who's got 23 split personalities. It's interesting. 23 is the number of the Discordian 23 enigma, which ties into the law of fives. They believe everything happens in that law of fives. And the 23, I've also read, is the number of Satan, 2/3, which equals 0.6666, repeating. So this guy's got 23 personalities, and he's trying to create and manifest the 24th, the beast. And he claims that the beast is the highest evolved form of humanity. All these things sound very familiar to themes of the Illuminati and the occult that I've talked about in the past. The movie openly talks about dissociative identity disorder, which is the idea that MKUltra can create sort of alter egos of the mind through fracturing. And it's also curious because the guy, I can't remember his name, the main, you know, the guy with the split personalities, he says his favorite artist is Kanye West. And you've surely seen my video, an article about that, about Kanye West's mental breakdown and supposed placement back into MKUltra in Los Angeles. Also, I saw on the film during one of the personalities, Hedwig, is this 9-year-old personality that he has. He takes the girl to his room, and you see drawings of the butterfly on the wall, Project Monarch. And there's also, of course, on the poster for Split, he's got the all-seeing eye, and the character has the devil's haircut, just like Aleister Crowley. So anyways, I'll put something together on that as well in due time. I've been down and out, God, for like 12 days, so I'm back in action here, so... Anyways, I hope you guys all have a blessed and wonderful week, and be careful with your social media. All right, thanks for listening. Oh, again, put the reviews on iTunes or Stitcher. You know the drill. And pick up The Dark Path on Audible or any of my books. They're all on audible.com. All right, thanks.